This is the Illinois Audio Reader. My name is Cedric Richardson, and thank you for joining me. Today I'll be bringing you news from the Decatur Herald and Review in two parts. This is part one. Thank you for joining me. Macon County COVID vaccination clinic fills up quickly with 70 new positive cases announced over the weekend. Once again, Macon County residents acted quickly to fill available appointments for COVID vaccination clinics scheduled for two different days this week. The Macon County Health Department issued a release at 2:30 p.m. Monday saying there were appointments available for Tuesday and Thursday. Shortly before 6 p.m., it issued a second release announcing no more slots were available. The appointment slots for the MCHD COVID-19 vaccination clinics on January 26th and 28th have been filled. We will be releasing information as soon as it becomes available regarding future opportunities, the release stated. The first time the health department announced appointments were available, its phone system was overwhelmed. On Friday, the department declared all 500 spots for a drive-through clinic were filled 1 minute after the event started, based on the number of cars already in the line. Governor J.B. Pritzker on Monday said the coronavirus.illinois.gov webpage will now have a portal to share information about the COVID-19 vaccine. The page has information about vaccine sites, eligibility, appointments, and more. On January 25th, the state entered Phase 1B of its vaccination plan, but Pritzker stressed at a visit to a vaccination site in Tinley Park on Monday that vaccines will currently be administered by appointment only. The rollout of Phase 1B is truly an exciting opportunity, and the development is ongoing. I want to remind everyone that there are only about 120,000 first doses arriving in Illinois, outside of Chicago, that is, this week, said Pritzker. Because of the federal supply limitations, I want to emphasize that vaccinations are being given by appointment only. I've said that before, but I want to make it clear so people don't go line up at their local pharmacy or line up at their local health department. The website has a list of vaccine site locations and links to the website of the pharmacy, health department, or other location where a vaccine appointment can be made. Pritzker, however, said the vast majority of people will be unable to make an appointment immediately in Phase 1B due to restrictions of who is eligible in the phase and a limited supply coming from the federal government. While Phase 1A prioritized healthcare workers and long-term care residents, Phase 1B includes people aged 65 years and older and non-healthcare frontline essential workers, defined as those workers who are essential for the functioning of society and are at highest risk of exposure. To date, Illinois has delivered over 1.6 million doses of the COVID-19 vaccine. Of those, 692,763 doses have been administered, with an average of 28,171 shots administered each of the past 7 days. Of the doses received, 550,050 have been part of the federal government's Pharmacy Partnership Program, which focuses on vaccinating long-term care residents through partnerships with nationwide pharmacy chains. A total of 110,403 doses have been administered through that program. Pritzker said that program has gone exceedingly slow, and he noted that the vaccines given through the program are taken from the state's federal allotment. Pritzker also announced Region 1 in Northwest Illinois and Region 2 in North Central Illinois each moved to Phase 4, which allows for indoor dining and drinking, and after last Friday's announcement from the Illinois Department of Health, competitive participation in high school athletics. Macon County health officials on Monday also announced 70 positive cases since Friday, 27 on Saturday, 18 on Sunday, and 25 on Monday. To date, the county has reported 9,092 positive cases and 169 deaths since the start of the pandemic. The state reported another 49 deaths Monday after reporting 39 on Sunday and 96 on Saturday, bringing the total death count to 18,798 since the pandemic began. There have been more than 1.1 million confirmed or probable cases among 15.4 million test results reported. The rolling 7-day average positivity rate dropped to 4.7%, according to the Illinois Department of Public Health, decreasing for the 17th straight day and hitting its lowest point since October 15th. A petition seeks to return of Anna Waters' name to the Decatur Early Childhood Services program. Cassandra Brown credits the Head Start program as one of the building blocks that led to her success today. When the 55-year-old from Atlanta, Georgia, learned that the program will no longer be named after Anna Waters, an influential community activist from Decatur, she decided to get involved. She started a petition in an effort to help the Anna Waters Head Start program retain its name. "I care about maintaining her legacy," Brown said, just recently learning more about the life of the Decatur community activist through a Facebook post by History of the Heartland. Brown went through the Head Start program as a child in 1968 and later graduated from Stephen Decatur High School in 1982. She went on to earn a 4-year scholarship to attend Tuskegee University. And as Waters' history involved overcoming the struggles of facing bigotry as an African-American woman in the mid-1900s, Brown found it fitting to file the petition on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. The activist spent many years advocating for voting rights and preschool education for underprivileged children. "She saw a need in her community, and she stood up and did something about it," Brown said. "That's what I loved about the story." The online petition had collected 731 signatures as of Tuesday morning and is expected to have 1,000 within the week, said Brown. The next step will be to present the petition in front of the Decatur-Macon County Opportunities Corporation, said Brown. "I credit my early learning for making such a difference in my life," Brown said. "I went through the Decatur public school system after that. I graduated college and had a successful career." The program was renamed the Anna Waters Head Start Program in November 1971, shortly after her retirement as a community organizer with the DMCLC. Parents pushed for the name change as a way to honor Waters and the impact she had on their children while in the program. Tara Murray, the executive director of DMCLC, said a rebranding process involved their early childhood services no longer being named after Anna Waters. "We value our history and our community's history and respect Anna Waters' legacy," Murray said. "We are working internally on plans to honor her contributions to our agency and our community in another way." Tired of beatings and fearful of death threats, a girlfriend finally calls 911, according to the Decatur police. A Decatur woman who, based on what she told police, is beaten by her boyfriend on average about every 11 days, finally had enough when she feared he was about to kill her, according to a sworn affidavit. That was back on December 27th when the 43-year-old woman called 911 after telling a friend, "He has hit me 3 times today," according to the Decatur police affidavit. Her 32-year-old boyfriend was gone when police arrived at her address on Carroll Drive, but the affidavit said they caught up with him at 7:50 a.m. Saturday and he was arrested on a preliminary charge of domestic battery. Officer Robert Murray said the woman told police she estimated her boyfriend had beaten her up to 40 times during their on-and-off relationship over the last 16 months. She is quoted as saying on the night of December 27th, he had taunted her by talking about a woman he had cheated on her with. She said she had become upset and he retaliated by lifting her off of the bed by her hair. She said she later asked him for a hug and he replied, "I told you to quit talking," before wrapping his hands around her neck and telling the weeping woman, "I'll give you something to cry about," the affidavit said. She advised she began calling for police at this time, and he made statements like, "You're going to die, and you just ruined your life." A friend of the woman, who had let her live in his house after she had told him she wanted to get away from her boyfriend, overheard the confrontation and a series of loud thuds coming from her bedroom. A friend is quoted as telling police he asked the boyfriend if he had hit the woman, and he said the boyfriend replied, "Police would have to prove that. She doesn't have any marks." Murray said he did not see any visible wounds on the woman, whom he described as very emotional, the officer added. She stated continuously that she did not want the boyfriend to get in trouble, but was afraid for her safety. A man is accused of enslaving neighbors to clean his Decatur apartment, police allege. A terrified woman and her friend were forced with death threats to clean the apartment of a male neighbor because the woman owed the man $20. A sworn affidavit filed by Decatur police said the 24-year-old neighbor had kicked in the door of the 52-year-old woman's apartment Saturday evening, where she was at home with her male friend, aged 51. She stated that the neighbor entered the apartment and threatened to kill her and her friend unless they cleaned his apartment for the $20 she owed, said Officer Joseph Robinson in the affidavit. The frightened pair did as the neighbor asked, but the woman told police the threats continued as they worked. She advised that the neighbor threatened to kill her if she did not get on her hands and knees to clean the floor, Robinson added. She said while cleaning, the neighbor grabbed her cell phone and threw it on the floor and cracked the screen. She advised her friend and herself cleaned the apartment for approximately 40 minutes as the neighbor threatened to kill them. She stated she feared he would harm her. The 51-year-old friend confirmed the woman's account, and he said he set to sweeping while the woman did other chores. He advised that the neighbor pushed him down because he was not cleaning fast enough, Robinson said. He said he fell down, striking his right hip on a table. He said that he felt that he could not refuse to clean the apartment due to fear the neighbor causing him harm if he refused. Robinson noted the woman's cell phone was smashed, and he also noted that the woman said she owed him money. Robinson noted the woman's cell phone was smashed, and he also took note that the door and door jamb to her apartment was cracked. The neighbor was stopped and questioned by officers as he walked down the hallway past the damaged door. The couple both positively identified him as their tormentor. The neighbor is quoted as confirming the woman owed him the money and said he knocked on her door and asked her if she had the cash. He advised he reached an agreement with her that she would clean his apartment to repay the debt, said Robinson. He advised he did yell at the woman and her friend while they cleaned his apartment, but denied threatening them. He admitted he pushed the friend down, but claimed the friend pulled a screwdriver on him. Police didn't buy his version of events, and the neighbor was arrested and booked on a preliminary charge of involuntary servitude, criminal trespass to an occupied residence, battery, and criminal damage. A check of Macon County jail records Tuesday showed the neighbor is free after posting a $2,500 bond on bail set at $25,000. Prosecutors had asked for bail of $75,000. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the state's attorney's office. A 200 million gallon sale of U.S. ethanol to China is big news to that industry and to ADM, which apparently can claim the U.S. side of the transaction with state-owned COFCO on the buyer's side. Big news because it's been a long time between any sales of ethanol to China. The last was similar amount was in 2016, before the trade conflict erupted, and while China was pursuing a policy to clean up the air in its metropolitan areas. Since 2016, there have been only two significant sales of ethanol, in 2017 and 2018, of about 50 million gallons, with a token amount in 2020. This is big news in a recent flurry of action in the farm commodity economy, as farmers have been watching corn and soybean prices on an uninterrupted, five-month meteoric rise. Heart palpitations have not slowed for many of them. There is excitement for those who still have 2020 crops to sell. There is anger for those who emptied their bins weeks and months ago. And there are challenges for all farmers wondering how to best price their 2021 crops before the market collapses. But will it collapse, or will we suddenly be on a new level thrust upward by a supercycle in the commodity market? Oh, what an exciting time to be in agriculture. China's loss of its swine herd to a pandemic of African swine fever provided a lot of upward momentum. That's because the Chinese population was hungry for pork, and the government had to quickly replace hundreds of millions of hogs almost overnight. They did. And the hogs are hungry also. So China bought nearly 1 billion bushels of soybeans from the U.S. and a record amount of corn to feed the hogs. Those are reasons that corn prices pushed to the $5 mark and beans pushed to over $13 a bushel. Those were the highest prices in over 7 years. But what is the future for those prices? The International Grains Council says Brazil will harvest a record crop of soybeans in 2021. U.S. farmers could also plant a record number of acres of soybeans in 2021. But even with such increases in production, there have been increases in demand for soybeans, and the International Grains Council expects a record low amount of carryover supplies of soybeans this year. The U.S. will only have a 2-week supply of soybeans when the marketing year ends in August, and the global supply will not be much larger than that to feed the world, particularly those hungry hogs in China. As farmers, commodity traders, and other investors look at the grain markets, the news is basically positive. Demand is strong for the old crop, and demand will be strong for the new crop. Farmers are flush with cash to put the 2021 crop in the ground, thanks to high prices and 3 years of ad hoc government farm payments. The only cloud on the horizon is the potential for a 2021 drought. Uh-oh. Looking over to other news, a long and patient investigation of an alleged Decatur drug dealer involving police setting up a drug purchase to gather evidence has now resulted in an arrest. The 33-year-old man was taken into custody January 15th and booked on a preliminary charge of dealing in cocaine. He was released from the Macon County Jail on Tuesday after posting $5,000 bond on bail set at $50,000. Prosecutors had requested bail of $75,000. A sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department Street Crimes Unit said the man was first targeted by officers in June 2019. During the investigation, detectives cultivated a cooperating source, said Detective Chad Ramey, writing in the affidavit. The source advised in 2018 and 2019 they had been purchasing powder cocaine from a suspect they identified as the suspect, and also identified his residence on East Clay. Ramey said detectives then obtained a court order permitting eavesdropping operations and set up a controlled purchase of powder cocaine, which went down on June 24th. The cooperating source was issued money to buy drugs and fitted with audio and video equipment to record the transaction when he went to the suspect's house. The CS was followed directly to East Clay, where he walked inside the residence. The suspect retrieved the powder cocaine and exchanged the cocaine for the U.S. currency, according to Ramey. More investigations followed, and the purchased illegal drugs were sent to the state police crime lab for analysis. Ramey said the drugs tested positive and weighed 3.3 grams. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the state's attorney's office. And these are the obituaries for today. Elizabeth Bett Ruth Anderson, 95, of Decatur, passed away January 23rd, 2021 at Embledon Creek Living Center. Memorial graveside services will be held at a later date at Macon County Memorial Park. Memorials are to the donor's choice. Bett's family would like to give a special thank you to the staff and employees at the Embledon Creek Living Center. The Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home has been entrusted with the care of Elizabeth. Condolences may be left to Bett's family at gracelandfairlawn.com. Robert Michael Bob Bosack. Robert Bob Bosack, 77, was peacefully laid to rest on January 24th, 2021. He died on January 24th, 2021. Memorial services will be held at Mount Sinai Mary's University in Emmitsburg, Maryland at a later date. Contributions may be made to the Parkinson's Association of Southwest Florida of Hope Hospice. To plant trees in memory, please visit our sympathy store. Howard Martin Brown. Howard Martin Brown, 90, of Decatur, died on Thursday, January 21st. 2021 in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Funeral services to celebrate Howard's life will be held 2 o'clock to 2 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, January 28, 2021 at Concordia Lutheran Church at 3303 East Maryland Street in Decatur, Illinois, 62521, with Pastor David Bultman officiating. Visitation will be 1 hour before service time at the church. Burial service will be 1 o'clock p.m. Friday at Grove City Cemetery near Blue Mound, Illinois. Memorials, if desired, may be made to Concordia Lutheran Church. Tanzius Logan Funeral Service and Care is in charge of arrangements. Leonard Edgar Gade. Leonard Edgar Gade, 87, passed away on Saturday, January 23rd, 2021, in his home surrounded by his family. And for services, the family would like to express their gratitude to the Veterans Administration, especially his visiting nurse, for care and companionship. Graveside services to honor Leonard's life with military honors will be held at Mount Gilead Cemetery, Decatur, at 2:30 p.m. on Wednesday, today. The family has entrusted Moran and Goble Funeral Home and cremation services with arrangements. We share memories and condolences at moranandgoble.com. Looking up next, Albert E. Hensley. Albert E. Hensley, 69, of Decatur, passed away January 24, 2021, at his residence. Graveside service will be 1 o'clock p.m. Wednesday, January 27, 2021, at North Fork Cemetery in Decatur. Memorials in Airboat's honor may be made to the American Cancer Society. Robert Bob Holt. Robert Bob Holt died on Saturday, January 23rd, 2021 at Memorial Medical Center in Springfield. A funeral service to honor and celebrate Bob's life will be held at 10 o'clock a.m. on Monday, February 1st, 2021 at Dawson and Wickham Westwood Street Funeral Home. Bob will be laid to rest in Salem Cemetery. Memorial contributions may be directed at the American Heart Association or to the Tannen Gillen Foundation. Alberta Long, 95, passed away on January 24th, 2021, surrounded by her family. Private services to celebrate Alberta's life will be held at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home, with Pastor Matt Samuels officiating. A visitation for Alberta will be held on Thursday from 9 o'clock a.m. to 11 a.m. at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. CDC guidelines will be followed. Face masks are required of those in attendance, and social distancing will be followed. Marilyn Joan Pierce, 93, of Decatur, passed away Friday, January 22, 2021, at her son's home in Canton, Illinois. Private family burial will be held at Zion Cemetery in Bodie. Arrangements by Dawson and Wickoff at 515 West Wood Street in Decatur. View the online obituary, send condolences, and share memories at DawsonWickoff.com. Dorothy Shingleton. Dorothy Shingleton, 80 years old, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away January 24, 2021, at her residence. Funeral services will be held 1 p.m. Friday, January 29, 2021, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 11 a.m. to 1 o'clock p.m. Friday at the funeral home. Burial will be at Fairlawn Cemetery. Memorials to St. Jude's Hospital or the family of Dorothy Shingleton. Video services will be streamed at funeralvue.com/login/event number 46339. Condolences may be left to Dorothy's family at gracelandfairlawn.com. And that is all for the obituaries for today. Mr. and Mrs. Robert Wendell Malone are celebrating their 70th anniversary. Mr. and Mrs. Robert Wendell Malone of Forsyth will celebrate their 70th wedding anniversary with a family gathering at a later date. Robert Wendell Malone and Rosemary Ann Randall were married in 1950 in Forsyth at the Methodist Church. He's an Army veteran and retired as a farmer. She is a retired farm wife. They are the parents of Deborah Beal of Decatur, Robin Ritchie of Eureka, Jill Cundale of Forsyth, and Joy Boostrom, husband Rusty Boostrom of Monmouth. They have two grandchildren, three great-grandchildren, six step-grandchildren, and seven step-great-grandchildren. Congratulations to them indeed. And with that, I thank you for joining me here on the Illinois Audio Reader. It's always a pleasure to read with you. Again, my name is Cedric Richardson, and I look forward to bringing you the news soon again. Good night.